This is the Side Hustle Show with Nick Loper, Episode 3.
Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, where aspiring part-time entrepreneurs learn how to turn their side hustle dreams into reality. Because your 9-to-5 may make you a living, but your 5-to-9 makes you alive. And now, your host, Nick Loper.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show. Nick Loper here. Great show for you today. We're going to learn all about app development and sales from a real tried and true expert in the field, Alex Genadinic. And sorry if I butchered his name. I'm really excited because I feel like the app market is so huge right now and it's only getting bigger, but it's really something I don't know too much about personally. So I'm eager to learn right along with everybody else. So Alex is a mobile developer and founder of Problemio.com, which provides a four-app series for startups. And his apps have been downloaded more than 100,000 times and have been used to help plan more than 13,000 new businesses already. So it's awesome, awesome stuff. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So great to have you on. I want to get started. Just can you tell me a little bit about your background, how you got started in this business?
Yeah, well, I was a developer, like all developers were at once when there was no mobile phones. And then at some point, you know, we all have to just learn how to make, you know, create new technology. So I just had to make a mobile app to learn it. And it just so happened that I kind of started making a little toy business app. And then I noticed that people who were downloading, they were trying to use the business planning feature of it.
Okay.
And, you know, in the tech industry, business planning isn't that popular. Some people are against it and, you know, so I kind of didn't want to do business planning, but I noticed like a lot of my users, they wanted to do business planning. You know, I tried to make other features and they just weren't using those. So I started sort of making features and adding things to the app, which are closer to business planning because those were the features that were getting traction in the app. Those were like the things that were giving me good reviews in the app store and things like that.
Right. Give the customers what they want. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of didn't really want to give them everything that they wanted because I had my own ideas for what they should have.
Okay.
But they really didn't care for my ideas that much and they kind of knew what they wanted. And you know, if I didn't give it to them, they would barf. So, but I noticed that actually, if I gave them more of what they wanted, they would be very happy. Even though, like, it's not like I didn't think it's the best for them. But that's what you know. I think you can sort of like influence their behavior, like 10%, 15%.
Right.
Radical, like not like. You know, I can't tell somebody who wants to plan their business not to.
Right. So it was testing different iterations to arrive at kind of what the people downloading it were looking for.
Yeah. I almost built because the app's environment gives you so little insight about the users. Because it's on their device. A lot of times you really don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And the analytics platforms, they're still sort of limited. Like you just don't get the right insight. I had to build in my own sort of small analytics package,
okay,
which isn't professional. Like it's not something like that could be used in a library as a library by other apps, but it was just enough for me to tell what the users were doing on the app.
Okay.
They're navigating and like, you know, like what's happening. So it was really just built for my app, kind of like, and it gave me like extra insight into what was going on, you know?
And yeah, very smart. I think let's go back to that a little bit later, but back from the beginning. So you're a programmer by trade or by education. Now is the, you know, iOS language, is that different? Like how different is that or how hard is that to pick up based on, you know, from other programming languages?
Well, yeah, my education I have a bachelor's in computer science. So But in that, we mostly covered like a lot of theory and algorithms and like, you know, data structures. And we did do like actual programming.
Okay.
But, you know, this whole iOS environment just didn't exist at all when I was going to college. So, but what the education gives is sort of like the fundamentals so that you have some sort of a fundamentals with which you approach every new language with that you learn.
Right.
Because some things just don't sort of change. But it's always, there's always like a 2 or 3 months period with every new technology or language that you just kind of bang your head against the wall. Like it's a very frustrating experience. And it's just like, you have to get over that hump. So
is it something that a non-technical person could learn, or would it be better for them to head over to Elance and try and outsource if they have an idea for an app?
So if people have ideas for, if non-technical people have ideas for apps, and this issue comes up all the time because I'm running a business planning app.
Right, right.
This is like, so I'm faced with this like every week, sometimes more than once a week, right? So there's 3 options. You can learn on your own. You can hire someone like an agency, which will give you like very professional work, but very expensive.
Okay.
Or you can hire an Elance person who will give you lower quality but cheaper work.
Okay.
Or, so there's actually a 4th option. You can find somebody to partner with.
Someone like, who has the programming skills.
Yeah, like a technical co-founder.
Okay.
Everyone has different tastes in how they approach it. My personal recommendation is that everyone should learn how to do this stuff, make the stuff on their own.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most frustrating, difficult path, but it empowers the person long term. To create any project they want in the future, and they have to depend on no one except themselves.
Right, exactly. Some self-reliance every now and again can be a good thing.
Yeah, because if you have to pay anyone, because people, they have this misconception that if they pay someone to get the version 1 out the door, things will be great. But they don't understand that that's just like the beginning. It's like, so if they're paying someone, let's say it costs some money, you know, a few thousand, which is a reasonable price.
Okay.
That's not the cost. The cost is every update in the future, they'll have to go back to that person and pay more and more and more. And it will be like tens of thousands of dollars by the time they're done.
Yeah, I've been down that road with some web development projects. You're right. It's, you know, it's one price up front, but it's not a static, thing. Anytime you need new features, it's, you know, you got to come back and knock on their door again. And maybe that's a strategy for developers is bid low initially and then get them on the maintenance charges.
It is actually exactly a strategy. And I'm a little bit amazed by companies who give a high bid because that's not where they make their money, you know. They make their money by sort of like just dragging the person along.
Right, and it's in the name of an ongoing relationship, whether or not it's you know, fully above board, but it's, you know, it's capturing that client for the long term is probably a better or a higher value, you know, than just getting that high price initially.
Yeah, well, so those the paid options, and especially if you consider that like most startups, like 95 or whatever the statistics are, fail.
Yes,
I mean that's just all going to be a waste of money. So, you know, even if that product is made, the risk is really, you know, the risk for startups isn't really a technical risk, at least it shouldn't be for most. The risk is really the market risk, like whether the market will accept this product and whether they will pay for it. So having the product is nothing because really it's having the product just allows you to test whether the market is going to accept it.
Right.
And that's the real issue. And some companies which have complicated technology do have tech risk as well. Like the technology just may not fulfill the promise.
Okay.
But that's rare. And I mean, you should avoid it if possible, especially if it's just a matter of building yourself. So the other issue is people can, like, and this is something that's popular that people recommend, is to find a technical co-founder. So that's the solution for not paying.
Gotcha. But it sounds like a little bit of education or investment in education can pay off in the long run versus forking over to some outsourced developer again and again.
Yeah, it will take longer. You're not going to build, like, the person who's learning, they're not going to build a good product at first. I mean, it's going to have, like, you know, some problems.
Yeah.
There's too much to learn all at once. So the product is not going to be great, but at least they'll have something and they can incrementally improve it, and it's free and they're learning.
Are there some good resources you would recommend for people who are interested in learning this app development language?
Yeah. So just because there's so many different technologies, starting with HTML and ending with app development, I mean, there's like hundreds of different technologies, like the databases, the server code, right?
Right. It's very overwhelming for somebody like me who's non-technical.
Yeah, it's very overwhelming. But the good news is that you don't need most of them. You know, you just kind of need a few. And so what, there's really like two things that a person should do. So they should start Googling, like how to, like literally like tutorial for web development, tutorial for HTML, tutorial for iOS programming, right? There's like a ton of these that are available.
Okay.
And then, and this is what I do when I don't know something, when I have a new technology, like tutorial for technology X, tutorial for how to make Android applications, tutorial for how to make iOS. And then it's very confusing. They use a bunch of language I don't understand and a bunch of concepts, which like I don't, is the first time I'm seeing it, right? So there's this amazing website that I use all the time. It's called Stack Overflow. I don't know if you're familiar.
It's a forum, a development forum.
It's this amazing development forum. And it's like, it's not just a development forum. It's like a real, very nice community where people are very supportive. So if people are new and they feel a little bit like, oh, my question might be a little dumb, there's none of that there.
Okay,
people
cool.
People are very supportive. People understand it's difficult. And there's some really brilliant people offering to help for free. And I myself, I use that site all the time.
Very cool.
And I wouldn't have gotten nearly as far if I didn't use it. So so I recommend just Googling around. And then when you have questions, just post them. You wouldn't post like, what is iOS, right? Because that's the kind of stuff that at least you should read. But once you have some kind of like a really confusing thing that's bugging you and you can't really solve it, then Stack Overflow is amazing.
Got it.
You get answers within like 5 or 10 minutes.
Very cool. And so the Apple software, the Apple language differs from the Android language. Is that correct?
Yes and no. Kind of yes and no. I mean, the native languages, they are different.
Okay.
But there are some things which you can do to program these things once, and it will compile both the native and from your code in this third-party tool. It will compile a Android app for you and an iOS app for you.
Oh, okay. What's the name of that tool?
You know, I actually don't use these tools because I do them natively.
Oh, okay.
Again, like if you just Google around for this sort of a thing, like there's a few options, and I think it, like a popular thing is like you can do it in JavaScript.
Gotcha.
But and then once you have the two versions, you can place them in multiple app markets. Like for example, you know, like people often make a mistake that if they make an Android app, it only goes into Google Play. But the truth is that an Android app can go into the Kindle marketplace.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Amazon Kindle.
Okay.
The Nook from Barnes & Noble. Because those are just Android.
Oh, right. I didn't know that. Very cool.
And I think, and I haven't tried, and that's something I did. So my apps are also on like the Kindle and the Nook. But what I haven't done, and I think it's worked in a similar way, is like you can also have this done for Windows 8 and BlackBerry. So without too many steps. Like if you write the code once, you can have it compiled into like Windows 8 or BlackBerry.
Okay, but those markets are kind of smaller right now. So maybe, if you need to focus your energies, probably wouldn't necessarily go after those right at the beginning.
If it's a low hanging fruit, why not? I mean, the Kindle and the Nook, they are relatively small markets as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, like Google Play and iOS are the main focus. I mean, and the App Store from Google, from Apple.
Yes.
So the Apple and Google Play, they're the main guys, and by far, like by orders of magnitude, they are the biggest out of the rest of the people of them. But if you can make money, from the other platforms, why not?
So let's talk about the differences between the Google Play or the Android market and then the Apple App Store. Like, from your experience, have you found kind of similar traction on both, or does one perform better than the other for certain? I guess, your apps are business related. Does the Android perform better for that, or does Apple?
Well, to get traction, I mean, so it's a discovery question, right? Like how do apps get discovered?
Yeah.
I mean, people make a big deal about discovery, and I guess it's a matter of what the goals are, because if your goal is to get 100 downloads a day, it's not that difficult. Now, it's very difficult if you want to get 10,000 downloads a day. It just requires a whole different operation. If you're a company and you kind of have like really large goals, then app discovery is very difficult, because you have to not only rank in, like, let's say if you're a business app, you have to rank for like the word business.
Right, which is probably almost impossible.
Well, if you have big goals, you also have big budgets, which makes it easier.
True. So what kind of process did you go through to get your apps, discovered initially?
So initially, my first app was an Android app. And during the first little bit, like first few months, I was getting like 50 downloads a day.
And this was the business planning app that you built just on a whim, just to learn the language.
Yeah. And it was really bad at first. I mean, it had bugs. Okay. And yeah, I mean, it was just a learning tool for me. So it had bugs, and it had like very experimental things, and it had like no design and just all kinds of things.
But you put it out there, and it gets 50 downloads a day just by virtue of being present in the marketplace.
Not quite.
Okay.
Well, so
it can't be that easy.
Well, okay. So there are some very basic things that you can do. When we talk about app discovery, I almost don't think of it that way. I think about it like when you're in Google and, SEO, right? So this is search engine optimization.
Okay.
So I kind of think about it as SEO, because what you have to do for SEO is research your keywords, find the demand of those keywords from users, right? Like Google actually provides that Google keyword tool for that.
Okay. And are we talking about in Google or inside the Android market?
You see, I'm talking about Google.
Okay.
But all these principles, they relate into the Android market. And what almost no developers do, well, like companies do it, but single developers almost never do, is actually take the learnings from the decade or so we have from the Google SEO.
Okay.
And transfer that into the app SEO. And that's where I went right with my project, just because I had the SEO experience.
Okay.
And that's where my competitors in the App Store, they don't get this right. And for that reason, I was able to jump over almost all of them.
Very cool. So what can you do? Is it just, writing a good description of your app or putting in certain keywords? How do you go about optimizing your app for SEO inside the marketplace?
Yeah. So what I did is, number one, you have to research your keywords. Luckily for me, it's like they wanted to do the business planning. So my business plan is a reasonably good and high volume keyword.
Yeah, for sure.
So people search for that. Like if you have a game app, it's more difficult because if you have a game app and it's called, they have like strange names, right?
Yeah.
Birds. Nobody searches for that unless they already know about it. Right. But if you didn't know about Angry Birds, how would you ever discover that thing?
Right. Okay. So
if you have a name like a brand, then, it's harder. But if you have something that people search for or need, then it's a little easier because you actually have a keywords people search for and you can just try to rank for that. So I have those keywords in my name, my description of the app. That's really basic, and that's something everyone can do.
Okay.
So that's really simple. And then the other less simple things are, if you get bad reviews and people, next potential downloaders, read them, no one's going to download the app.
Yeah.
So the quality, so you'll get this initial, you can get, just based on the keywords and things like that. Even if you rank number 30 for some keyword and your app is free, you'll still get a trickle of downloads, just like I did with the 50 downloads a day.
Okay.
Which is very little.
That sounds okay to me.
I was very happy.
Was this a free app or this was a paid app?
It was free, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I was happy with it at first because I didn't, I was just learning, right? It's just new experience, like, oh my God, this is great. But like, it's not enough to build a business, or not even close. I mean, I don't think even like 1,000 downloads is enough to, it depends how you monetize. But I mean, 50 downloads is very little, although it's nice for someone who has less than that, right? If you're just starting, 50 is a good start.
Right.
You can do something with it because, if people like the app, some of them will give nice reviews and that will encourage more other people to give nice download the app, and then they will get nice reviews, and then you'll have this kind of great cycle.
Yeah, so the momentum will build on itself. So that's good. So what do you do to address people who, especially, hey, I'm just starting out, this is my first app that I've ever built, it's bound to get negative reviews. Like you said, it's buggy. So what do you do to address those and make sure they don't kind of hinder the app long term?
I have so few bad reviews that I for the longest time, I think for 6 or 7 months, I had only one-star review.
Oh, okay.
Like,
well, you must be doing something right. Jeez.
My app, here's what I did. By the way, so this first app, it became like one of the highest rated apps on Android. It had like, I think it like a 4.8 out of 5-star rating.
Right. Right.
I can't really explain why people, but I can tell what I think. Number one is, for the first little while, I didn't monetize the app. So everything was like, free, free, free. Here's everything for you. The app, the only goal of the app was to make the app better for the user.
Right. So no ads, no nothing.
No ads. Oh yeah. Stay away from ads, by the way. Ads, like, really bad. and I'll tell you about that. I have like very interesting stories with ads.
Okay.
It's actually worthwhile to discuss that for a few minutes, but, so yeah, no ads. But even if you have like, anything paid or in-app purchase, I had nothing like that. And I had basically like just like I mentioned, I was creating every feature just to help the users more. And I knew what they wanted because I built that sort of internal analytics thing. And I really got to understand what they needed. And I was able to make the features that they needed. But early on, like you mentioned, you know, when the app was not that good, they still didn't give me bad reviews. And I think some of the honesty with which I made the app helped me not get bad reviews. Like in the description I wrote, you know, like for tech support, please email me directly. Right.
So if okay. Yeah. Yeah. And just positioning yourself as a real person who's accessible. And okay, I think that's a great idea.
A couple of people emailed me, right? So because right below that is the form to give a review.
Yeah, better they email you than flame you out on the review system.
Exactly. So that's what I did, right? Right away, and I still have it across all my apps, for tech support or any questions, please email me. So they don't get to that, you know, if they're looking. And I don't think they want to give a bad review. I think people actually want the app just to work.
Right.
So, yeah. And then, and there were just things like that. You know, the content in the app was written sort of like to them directly. I addressed them, and I think it came through that, like, I was actually trying to help them. So I think for that reason, for a very long time, I had like no bad reviews. And then, I think after 4 or 5 months, I got like my first bad review, and it was just like heartbreaking. I was like, what's going on? Like,
oh no. Yeah, that sucks. So it sounds like, you're spending all this time and effort giving all this value away for free. And the irony maybe is that it's a business planning app. Is there a long-term business plan here behind giving away for free? Like, what's the monetization strategy that you've taken since then?
Right. So, yeah, at some point I realized, well, the reason to give the app away for free is because I wanted more users. Because when I had more users, I was able to observe and learn from them about exactly what they needed.
Great, great.
And that helped me to create a product that I was very confident would be helpful for them. And once I got to that point, I started monetizing. And that was difficult. You know, I tried every which way. Like, I tried adding like affiliate links. It didn't really work. It actually works poorly on mobile just because for technical issues, but just affiliate things just don't really work well on mobile.
Okay.
Without getting too much into technical details of it.
Right. So you developed your own product. Is that the paid app series or was that something else?
Yeah, I got to the idea of paid app series a little later. I mean, I was trying to, offer like consulting services. That really didn't work. Only a few people sort of hired me for that.
Okay.
Then I tried a bunch of things. Didn't work. Largely because what I learned from these particular users, right, is, they are kind of like people who, you know, oh, I just got a business idea. Let me try to make a plan for it. So they got the app, right? So it's not like they're these entrepreneurs who have this wherewithal and they're sticking with it. They're kind of just people who are largely just want to see what's going on and want to learn about it. So they have a very high quit rate.
Right.
So basically, if I don't get them to spend today, they're not going to be doing this stuff tomorrow.
Okay.
So for that reason, it had to be like a small purchase and quick. So I got to the idea that having like smaller apps that provide some value at a very, very reasonable cost, that would be a good experiment. From that, I made the 4 app series because the 4 app series covers the 4 topics that people struggle with the most, which is like many people, they just have like business idea issues. Like they want business ideas. They don't know how to get them.
Just for generating new business ideas.
Yeah, and a lot of people ask me for, like, what's a good business idea, you know, and I can't tell everyone the same answer, right? Like, I can't, you know, because it has to be something that works for that individual.
Right, well, yeah, and when you have 50,000 people, 100,000 people all asking for business ideas, you know, they've got to have some way to generate them themselves versus you just you know, sending them a list of 10 business ideas, right?
Exactly. Like, so, and many people, they just have such unique situations. I mean, they live in different countries. They have different life pressures. I mean, like, you know, they have different time horizons. Like, it's impossible to really, you know, give them anything, you know, like many of them, they don't, you know, they cannot do it. Technical startup would not be good for them.
Right.
And non-technical startups tend to cost a lot of money. So, right. Cause you need tools and, you know, different things, sometimes office space, but so it's just impossible. Right. And most business ideas, they just don't make enough money. Like, you know, a lot of the like, oh, I'll sell this widget from home. That's just not going to make enough money to be a real business. So there's just too many things to consider. So I made a whole bit app just going over like how to get business ideas, how to think about them, like some of the psychology, how to deal with the stress, you know, how to choose them. Like, what if you have like too many business ideas? Because that's a common thing that people approach me with. Like, they're like, I can't decide between business ideas.
Okay.
So there's a lot really goes into it, and I couldn't cover all that. Like, just there's too much to cover, right? So I made a whole app for it. The next app is I made a premium business plan app where I just gave like more things, to the business planning person. The next app was a fundraising app because so many people want to raise money for their business and don't know how, and they don't know even how much they need to be raising and,
okay,
and things like that. So made like a fundraising app, which sort of is a kind of, it teaches them how to get the most out of loans, investments, donations, and grants.
Okay.
And when each is applicable and.
Oh, very, you know, cool.
So yeah, because there's a lot that goes into that as well. I mean, you can write a whole book, you know? So, and the next app is my favorite app. Like, so people who download my favorite, that app, I like them the most because, well, I like my users the same, but I get extra excited because it's the marketing app. And then that's like the real exciting part, because that's where you focus on growing the actual business, you know?
Right. Like, okay, cool. So there's like, these four. So there's the premium business planning, the business ideas, the fundraising, and the marketing. And these are all priced between 99 cents and a 199, 299?
Right now.
Okay.
The value of them is they are supposed to be expensive apps because there's real quality in there. The advice is real solid. I mean, the advice is built on all the experience of like the tens of thousands of companies, of entrepreneurs and companies that came before.
Right. And when you think about it, if you're starting a business, a couple bucks is a pretty small price to pay if it's going to end up making you a giant return in the end.
Yeah. Or, you know, it's almost like, so when the people get my marketing app, and more than half of them, and mind you, they're not in many of them are not in the tech industry, right? They may be like have a lawn care company or a restaurant they want to create. So, you know, they don't really know like web advertising. So a lot of them, when they make their marketing plan consists of business cards, Facebook, and things like that, right?
Okay.
And that's not going to get them anywhere. So a lot.
You mean you don't like business cards?
Business cards are okay, but you know, like it doesn't scale, right? And you know, for every like 100 business cards you give away, like there's like one serious business contact that, you know, sort of comes out of it. So business cards work, but it doesn't scale, and it cannot be the only thing you do. I mean, I do business cards, but it's like I do a million other things.
Right.
It's really like different businesses, they have to have a very different marketing strategy which works for them. And so basically the marketing app, it's kind of like, it's almost like it's not going to, the thing is, these apps aren't going to get these people to earn them a lot of money, because I mean, ultimately that's up to them. But what it really does is it helps them avoid gross mistakes.
Okay.
Because, like, you know, if you spend 3 months trying to hand out business cards and posting on Facebook, guess what? That's going to be a 3 months wasted time, right? The thing we discussed before, if you spend money paying a consulting agency for whatever, that also ends up like a lot of money spent. So what these apps can do is, and I really feel strongly that they're effective in it, is like for first-time entrepreneurs, they can really help to avoid big mistakes, which is the same as helping avoid wasting money and wasting time, you know? Because if you can, like, because sometimes one mistake just leads you into six months of work that after which you like realize, oh my God, this would be so much better if like somebody suggested giving better advice in the beginning.
Yeah, that's great. I think it's so cool that it's, you know, you're an entrepreneur yourself and helping all these other small businesses kind of get their, you know, their projects off the ground. It's really, really cool. So in terms of sales, obviously the paid apps are going to do a smaller volume than the free ones, but are they still doing okay using the same strategies of kind of internal marketplace SEO and then kind of the momentum builds after a few downloads and positive reviews?
To a large degree, yeah, but it is actually much harder to market paid apps. Even if, like, for every 100 free downloads, you can probably expect, like 5 paid downloads, right?
Yeah.
Like five of those guys would want to buy it. That's sort of like, I think that's even a good case.
Yeah. Have you seen the cartoon? There's a guy, a famous, the Oatmeal has this cartoon about buying, you know, the $500 iPad and then the $40 case and then like the 2-year extended warranty. And then he goes into the app store and is like, 99 cents for an app? Are you kidding me?
I haven't seen it, but it sounds funny. But yeah, I mean, I think it's partially, and like when I come into contact with paid apps, I mean, for some reason, it doesn't feel right to pay for them because we're just used to getting that software for free.
Yeah.
And I myself have this, but like, I think it's just a matter of time of getting over it. What does get me to pay for the app sometimes, if I enjoy using maybe their free product, and then I'm like, oh, you know, I kind of like using this company's products, then I sort of maybe pay for their like premium thing.
Yeah. So in the free one, I'm glad you bring that up. So in the free one that has the, you know, 6 figures worth of download users or a membership base, is there a kind of a cross sell or an upsell to say, hey, by the way, we have these premium apps that you should check out?
Yeah. So on Android, so that app that you mentioned right now, it's a little below 100,000. The 100,000 number I use is all the apps
all
together.
Combined. Okay.
Yeah, and that's like over 100,000. So the free app has kind of like, you know, the essentials. But if they want more articles or if they like, it doesn't cover marketing. So if they want marketing, you know, they gotta get the. I suggest them to get the paid app.
Okay.
And if they want to raise money, I provide like one article about raising money, but if they want more, they should get the premium app, right?
Okay.
And stuff like that. And if they want like my help, I used to offer my help for free, but now I just charge like the minimal amount, which is like a $2 download of the premium app, and sort of like they can get my help on it.
Okay.
And I mean, it's like, you know, if somebody is looking for guidance, it's like almost like a no-brainer, right? Because I mean, a consultant is going to charge like $50 an hour, and here I am just, you know, because I'm trying to grow the apps, I'm sort of giving my help away almost for free. So, so with the extra upsell things, and that actually works. It's just, again, a matter of volume, you know. So if the free app gets you know, whatever, like 100 downloads a day, five paid downloads or whatever, that it generates, that's not going to be a lot of money. But if it gets 1,000 downloads a day, then it's better. And then if it gets, you know, more downloads.
Yeah, yeah. So it's very much a volume-based business. But I like the tactic of building your own products versus, and you touched on this earlier, versus putting ads inside the apps. Did you experiment with advertising inside and it didn't work out very well?
Yeah, I have actually a very unique experience with this stuff because I knew my users would hate it. I knew it, right? But
But there's pressure. There's pressure to monetize.
There's some pressure to monetize. I kind of got to know some of the people who work at the ad companies, the mobile ad companies.
Okay.
And, you know, their job is to get me to publish their ads, right?
Exactly.
So they have these amazing statistics, which they twist. They're like, oh, yeah, if you publish, you know, you'll make this amazing money this way, right?
Right.
I didn't believe them, but, like, I wanted to try it.
Yeah, worth a shot.
Right. So I made an app. I made a whole separate app just to try it. And, you know, using this, it's free app and just using the same tactics, that app has like almost 20,000 downloads now. But it was for me like a throwaway app, just kind of like, I just want to see if they are honest, you know?
Yeah, if the ad strategy is feasible.
And I have my own ads, right? Because if I upsell my own app, that, by the way, that's an ad, but that's an ad for my stuff. But so
right, just, the margins are going to be better on that anyways.
It's better, it's more native, and it doesn't look like a real ad. Especially, you know, the phrasing that I use is like, you know, it's not as bad as just, hey, this is a blatant ad. Yeah. So I use this company, Tapjoy. I'll give an example. They're kind of like, they're big and they have this incentivized downloads where you can earn points. And if you earn enough points, it's just like you paid. And I ran it for like 1 week. And that particular ad, it's very intrusive, like very.
The Tapjoy ad was intrusive on your app.
To the users, right?
Okay. So
couldn't get to the place where they wanted to get to if they didn't perform some action, like download the advertisement, or, you know, like it's not just viewing the ads.
It's really annoying.
Really super annoying.
Okay.
But, you know, they said like, whatever, we are great, you know? So I tried it. And then that killed things so much for that app. In just 1 week, I got like most of the 1-star reviews, right?
Oh, wow.
Those 1-star reviews, I don't know if it's the 1-star reviews, but people didn't really engage with their ads. Instead, they just uninstalled my app, right?
Wow.
So combining the uninstalled apps, which is a negative engagement metric, which is, the App Store will rank you a little lower.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize. Okay.
All these engagement metrics as well. We didn't talk about it, but they're a little bit more complicated.
Yeah. So they're tracking uninstalls because they figure people are pissed off and say, this app is, I don't want it on my phone anymore.
Exactly. It shows like the app, a lot of people are uninstalling quickly. It shows that it's a bad app, right?
Yeah.
It's a signal. So that compared with like the bad reviews in the App Store, took the downloads from 200 a day for that particular app. That particular app was getting 200 free downloads a day to 100. Like, boom.
So cut the business in half. Did it, like, what kind of income were you seeing from it? Could it have been justified if the money was there, or was it not even that good?
It made $2 in revenue, right?
Oh, geez.
Right? So, and it kind of like it killed the traffic so that the next week it wouldn't even make $2 in revenue because I didn't have the same user base.
Right. It was just kind of a downward spiral. Interesting.
Right. So the much better strategy. So I like ran away from that, right? The much better strategy was to give the users a little bit more for free, to be kind to them, and to be really helping them, like giving them value.
Yes.
Testing to them, hey, you know, we have this paid apps. Would you like to use them? And, you know, if they're getting value, 99 cents is not a, you know, it's like a it's not a risk for them because they know they already got value a little bit, and 99 cents is not a big step. So
yeah.
So I upsell my own stuff, and it makes, not only does it like make money for me, it actually like, it gives me positive engagement metrics with the App Store and more in higher quality reviews. And that sort of thing helps the app grow.
Right. Plus, so, your name is tied to all of these. So, you know, you're kind of building, you know, building an audience, building a tribe around these apps, which is really cool.
Yeah. It's funny also because, you know, I have multiple apps, and the throwaway app, like there's a little bit, you know, the reviews aren't as good. And there's one app where like I really help people, on the premium business plan app.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like I really take the time to help people because they paid.
Yeah.
And that app has like ecstatic reviews. I mean, if you read through them, they're like, oh my God, da, 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 da. It's like, with like 10 line review, you know?
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah. And so it's like people react to me differently, right? If I give them like a mediocre product on the free apps that I just, you know, then they're like, eh, you know, whatever. And then the good product, the paid stuff, that then they're like really positive. And yeah.
But the
ad actually was, but the long story short, the ads actually lost me money, you know, because I lost the users and I only made $2 from it. Right.
Yeah. So that's really sad.
Actually lost money from it. So, yeah. And so for people, so that's something to really think about it. And nobody talks about it in the app, in the mobile world. Nobody really discusses that point.
Yeah, I saw some statistic the other day where it was, I forget the number, but it was some like crazy high percentage of all mobile ad clicks are accidental or something. And I was like, well, I believe it because when have you ever clicked on one on purpose? It's always just like, oh, you know, I fat fingered trying to reach the X or whatever it was. So yeah, it's kind of an interesting business. I'm curious to see where the mobile ad market goes over the next few months and few years.
I think so as a publisher, like I would not want to be a publisher of ads at all. Like that's a really bad thing to do. And I actually wanted to be more vocal about it for developers so that they wouldn't make the same mistake as I made with using the ads. But like, I just don't have enough of a reach.
Okay.
I don't have a platform. But what is actually good about mobile ads is that you can advertise on them, right? So, and this is something I'm doing, and I'm kind of starting to do this more. And so instead of being a publisher, instead of having ads appear on your app, I don't do that, but I advertise on other apps.
Okay, like other business-related apps or complementary apps?
Not really, because there's just not that many of, you know, and I don't want to broker these business relationships because they're so low volume. What I do is like I use the same mobile app company, mobile ad companies, which I can use to display ads on my app, are the same mobile ad companies which I can use to promote my apps.
Okay, so are you using Tapjoy or a different one to
as an advertiser, not as a publisher? I'm using them as an advertiser. I'm actually like right after this conversation, I'm actually integrating the Facebook to do the same, right?
Okay.
Like ads. Have you been seeing the Facebook ads for apps?
I haven't. Just in the sidebar or on the phone version?
On the phone, they actually put it in your main feed.
Oh, cool. No, I haven't seen it yet.
And so they have this app ad product, which seems to be popular, which seems to be, you know, sort of. And that actually is another thing that helps people is if you have more downloads, it actually helps you rank higher in the App Store as well.
Okay. So yeah. That makes sense.
Like then again, you know, if you have a bigger budget, I mean, if you can afford to pay for downloads, that will just propel your app pretty high up quickly.
Gotcha. So advertising is good from the standpoint of being the advertiser, but not necessarily from being the publisher.
Yeah. I mean, because my apps are mostly paid, so I can afford to advertise.
Interesting.
Right. But for a lot of free apps, they can't really afford to advertise because they just don't make enough money back. And they struggle with making money, which is the thing that I struggled with originally in my experience, because I try to make like in-app purchases work, and they kind of didn't work well just because, for a number of reasons. And then try to make like affiliate things and many things. And so monetizing a free app is actually kind of hard. And the only way I really found it to be effective is to upsell my other apps.
Yeah. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit. In the past couple of weeks, I came across this company, an app marketplace called Apptopia. Are you familiar with those guys?
I think that name sounds familiar, but I don't think I work with them.
Okay. It's like, Flippa for like website, buying and selling websites.
Yeah.
So it's like Flippa except for apps, which I thought was a kind of a cool cutting edge, business to be on. And so developers can go on, sell their apps, and people who think that's a good buy, if they want to try and make some money off it, can go in and buy them. And especially I think the opportunity is for stuff that's being under monetized or maybe has a big user base. Is a cool opportunity for people who don't want to take the time to develop it themselves, but still want to get in the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think this is the company that Mark Cuban invested in, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the one. I remember looking at it a little bit. It had some kind of interesting apps, but most of the apps, they weren't really good, right? Like, I remember looking at it and they were like, oh, my app makes like $1 a week or something, or it got like 1,000 downloads, which is, it's nice it's like a hobby, but to make real money with the stuff, you really need like volume.
Yeah.
And to get volume, you gotta be able to update the app and make like really amazing features, which you can just make it on your own, because you can't buy that, because you'll have to be updating the app anyway.
Right. All right, let's talk about, you touched on earlier kind of this backlash against business planning, especially in the tech world. Like, hey, don't waste your time on a business plan. Just get out and make something happen. Let's talk a little bit about why business planning, or if it's still necessary for even the smallest ventures, kind of the side hustle entrepreneur, the part-time entrepreneur. Is it still worthwhile to have a business plan?
I never had a business plan when I made this thing, right? So, but at the same time, I did some planning. I had to, and there was a lot of unknowns, right? Like for many businesses, everything should be known, right? If you have a grocery store, which is like already a commoditized business type.
Yes.
Or a restaurant or something, or lawn care. Those businesses, they've been done so many times before that there is knowledge out there for exactly every step. And you gotta figure this out before you start.
Gotcha.
Because that knowledge is just out there. It's like, you'd be just doing yourself a disfavor if you didn't figure it out.
Even if it's just one page, just put something down and be able to refer back to it.
Well, actually, you don't even need to. You can have it in your head, but as long as you know it. The reason I couldn't write a business plan for my company, for this thing, is because there were just so many unknowns, right? I'm making an app, which is like sort of like nothing like that exists. So I wasn't sure about who my exact target users are, because I got it wrong, right? I thought I was making different features, but my users wanted business planning. So I actually had a misconception about my target users. And their needs.
Right.
And I got the target market wrong. I had to figure this. These are, when you're doing something like an innovative business, these sort of things, they're a little bit more things you uncover on the fly. Right. Because it's just not lawn care. I mean, it's so much things in there are just new that you have to experiment. And then, and the first 6 months of it is like, so sort of figuring it out, is this going to be a business or not?
Yeah, I think that's where the backlash comes from. Like, for so much of the newer businesses, business planning isn't planning so much as business guessing. And that's where I think people are hesitant to waste their time doing it because it's like, well, you know, you don't really know. You got to throw something out there and see what sticks.
That's true. But I mean, that gets a lot of people in trouble too, because so let me come back to that. But like the real reason why business planning is like people are going away from it is because there's a whole class of consultants who know, they know that a lot of entrepreneurs, their main thing is like, they say they're entrepreneurs, but they just want money because they see the business as a way to, you know, fund their sort of life because they're maybe unemployed or having financial issues. So they're kind of looking to raise money and have the business support them, right?
Right.
So they know that, and they play on that. And so these consultants, they kind of play on this. And they say, well, I'll help you write a 30-page business plan. It's going to be amazing. And you can go to, you can use that plan to go to investors and raise money. I mean, and so just pay me $2,000 and I'll write the business plan for you. And then you can raise money with this business plan. And of course,
does that work?
It's totally wrong. It's never going to work because nobody's going to read a 30-page business plan. right? Investors don't even read a 1-page business plan. And the whole point of the business plan is not the it's not the form, it's not the length, it's really the quality of the content in it. So if the consultant is good, that they'll help you with strategy and improve the quality of the content, like refine your marketing strategy, you know, all that kind of stuff. But people know that, but a lot of the consultants know that, like, hey, you know, people fall for this sort of, for this pitch, like, hey, pay me $1,000, I'll write your business plan, and you can raise money with it. So that's
right, and that's the way it's been done for decades. And so there's still some comfort in having that document and being able to present it to a bank, whether or not it's still, you know, a viable strategy or not.
And banks don't even give money to new businesses. I mean, they want, like, you have to be in business for like 2 years or have some sort of a huge revenue.
Right, prove you don't really need the money, and then they'll give it to you.
Exactly, because their risk profile for a business which has not started, which is most people who want to have a business plan are in that, right? Most people who want to have a business plan have not started, right?
Right.
So the risk profile for any loan provider, the risk profile is just way too big. And there's very few companies which can give loans to people who have not started. And those are actually personal loans. They're not even business loans.
Right. So you still have a personal guarantee on it, which is super risky from a lot of different standpoints.
Yeah. It's hard to generalize them because there are so many offerings. But as a rule of thumb, that's sort of the vicinity that's sort of like how that space works. But that's the reason really why, that business planning itself, like, there's just some people that feast on this premise that people need the money. And I really think that's why that pure business planning space, like, it's getting a lot of like negative attention. Like, it's kind of like people view it negatively.
Right.
And itself, like, I don't really believe, like, there's no reason you need to have a formal business plan. No one's going to read it, but some things you really need to plan for. If you can do it in your head, or if you can put it down on a piece of paper, like I do have a strong feeling that, like, if you don't plan ahead, like, especially with finances, which is an area where most entrepreneurs, they don't really like to plan that. But that's the stuff that comes back to bite you. That's the kind of stuff you really need to plan out, like your costs, you know, like the market size, the revenue projections, right? Like, you kind of have to have a general idea of it, even if, in my case, like, I got it totally wrong. You should at least, try it, because, like, you know, if you are approaching a small market, it's going to be just very difficult. And if you're approaching a very big market, you're going to have way too much competition. So you got to have a reasonable strategy that at least takes these things and at least takes these things into account and plans for them, you know, like,
right. Be able to, you know, account for your cash flows or projected cash flows just so you can stay, in business. Well, Alex, we're running close to an hour here. So I want to wrap things up with your, number one bit of advice for, kind of the side hustle entrepreneurs, whether that's in terms of apps or business, business planning or marketing, whatever that may be. We'd love to hear it.
Well, my number one tends to be that people should make their own products, but people hate to get this advice because most people who haven't already made their stuff, I mean, they really don't like to get that advice.
I think that's good advice.
But so then my second advice is like you have to get to know your customers as deeply as possible, because like the product that you make, they have to love it, right? Otherwise, there's nothing else that's going to work. I mean, so you have to make a product that people will love to use and pay for. And for that reason, you have to like really know your customers so well to know what they will pay for.
That's great. That's great. So get to know your customer, build your own stuff and get to know your customers as well as you can.
Build your own stuff because like that may not work for everyone. Some people, you know, they get a business partner and they have a different, you know, they manage things differently, right? That's not the only way to go. But definitely you should like know your customers.
That's awesome. So much great stuff. Really excited to learn so much about the app market and have Alex share some of his knowledge there. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
All right. That's it for this edition of the Side Hustle Show. Thanks so much for listening. If you like what you hear, do head on over to iTunes and leave a nice review. It's very much appreciated. And until next time, get out there and make something happen.
Thanks for listening to The Side Hustle Show at www.sidehustlenation.com.